Morning.
Morning, mate.
Hi, Blair.
Morning, boys.
Good. You all right, mate?
We can talk sensible now.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So how is it being back down at St Andrews and Le Crayde?
Yeah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, you've only got to look around the place. It's I said it's the same, but it's different. Obviously, there's been a lot of investment in the club. Chatting to Dale there, head of media guy, so coming in and he's giving me a tour everywhere. So it all looks really familiar, but you can see there's been a lot of investment. I like to think the soul of the club's still here. When you watch games now, you can still see the atmosphere and the fans, the terraces are still the same. But to come back, I've taken a picture in a car park straight away. It just brings back so many good memories for me. And it does. I remember, you know, watching Macca's thing back the other day as well, the hairs on the back of your neck for certain things. When I turn up here, that really does happen to me, because for a West Country lad of 27 signing for Birmingham City in the Championship back in the day, it's what dreams are made of. And it's a pleasure to be here, real pleasure.
Just moving on from that as well. So you're from the West Country, Macca's from far up north, Jeff's from up north, but you all have got that common thing where you're saying it's like blues is in your blood. It's like a really strange thing as a fan to think what's in the water down here. Because Jeff said a lot of people who played here still live here and stuff. So
yeah,
it's just mad that you're not from here. And
yeah,
it's... I don't know, if players don't historically kind of support clubs, but I suppose there has to be that little bit in you to think, I'll give a shit about the club.
Massive. I always say I'm an adopted Brummie, even though I've lost my accent again, it's probably the West Country when I come back out. So my two boys still live in Hockley Heath. Oscar's 16 and Morley is 21. So yeah, my in-laws had a box over on the main stand when I signed for Birmingham City as well. So yeah, it's... I think it's one of those clubs, and especially I'm a working class boy. If you're a working class boy, you relate to it straight away. And I think that's why I had such a good relationship with the fans. When you turn up and you give 100% for the shirt, and it's an old adage and it might sound really crude, but Birmingham City for me was all about that. It's working class people. All they want to see you do is give your best for the shirt and for the club. And that's certainly what I did as well. When I played and turned on that shirt, it was about giving everything you possibly could. And that was in me. That was installed in me from my parents. And, yeah, I really enjoyed living here. It was great. We all lived in Dickens Heath. If you remember, Dickens Heath was just getting built back in the day. So, I mean, I know there's a few lads still there now, but Nick Eden lived there, Didier Debola, Stan Lazarias, a good friend of mine at the time, all lived there. Jeff Horsfield lived there. Brian Hughes lived there. So we were all in Dickens Heath. Obviously, it's a little bit different now. I drive through it now when I come back up, and it's a little bit different, but we all had that bit where we go for meals. The families were really close as well. Helen played a big part in that, Trevor's wife. I think she was excellent at that, God rest her soul. She, as soon as someone signed for Birmingham City, she made sure the families were looked after, made sure the wives, the girlfriends, the partners were looked after. And I think we had that real connection then as a group. And that, I think that showed a lot in our performances as a team. We were such a good, strong team with spirit, endeavour, never say die attitude.
Oh, there was backbone in that team. It was survived from front to back.
It was right through. And if you didn't have that, you wouldn't be in the team. And you wouldn't survive in that dressing room, by the way, because that's a tough dressing room to survive in as well. So, really, really, really great memories.
So if we take it back to the start then, obviously your career and life in football, over 200 non-league appearances, 500 league appearances in total.
Yeah.
Plus. So how did it begin for you? Because on your notes, the thing that jumped out for me was playing with Marcus Stewart as schoolboy.
Yeah.
And then being arrested in Germany after the cup final.
Thanks for that, mate. Thanks for bringing that one up. You didn't mention that before I came in.
He didn't put seven notes.
No. Yeah. That's a good one.
That is like the first three lines of your Wikipedia. So it is out. Yeah. It's in the public domain.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so how did football begin for you?
Yeah, West Country boy. Obviously brought up local football school, captain your team, play for your county. Never really spotted by an academy, but you mentioned the Bristol Rovers one. So back in the day, Bristol Rovers Parkway, they were called, their youth set up. Bristol City was called West Town. Big rivalry, obviously, in the city as well. So I was doing really well locally, but not quite. I was a late developer, and that proved that while I ended up here at 27. So I got invited on the tour with Bristol Rovers, me and my best mate, Andy Watts, who I meet for breakfast once a week, every week still. He's a good lad, played Southern League football, etc. So, yeah, myself and Andy got invited on a tour to Bristol Rovers, and it was away in Germany. England, Germany, not a good start already. So we go across, we do really well. We lose in the final of this tournament. And the staff said, look, I think we're only 14, 15. You're allowed to go out and go to these outdoor barbecues, da da da. And next is, yeah, well, we'll try one of the lagers. A few of the lads.
Well,
yeah, really strong. And it got a bit rowdy. I'm not going to name names. Certain lads, we're walking through like a little suburb. And I remember, you know, these grand houses when you have like the figureheads of a lion or whatever at the end of these driveways. I remember someone just kicking one. It fell on the floor and shattered everywhere. And I was like, this ain't going to end well. So as we're going through and we're rowdy, there's obviously phone calls being made to police as we're dotting through. Next thing I hear is, woo, woo. Police car comes around the corner, jump out, halt with a baton. And we were like, yeah, all right, mate, whatever, just do one. 20 copper cars come round the corner. We're pinned up against the wall, whacked to the back of the legs. We're only young kids, all chucked into copper cars. And we're taken off because it's a suburb. So it's a bit like, say, Hockley Heath would be. There's not big police stations. So we're all taken off different police stations all across Germany. And we went in at midnight and then came out, I think, lunchtime the next day. So, yeah, thankfully, we were going to get extradited back across a big legal case in Bristol, et cetera, et cetera. So what went from me going away on some sort of trial ended up, it could have been a different kind of trial. But yeah, it's one of those life stories that it does get mentioned every now and again. So yeah, there's no criminal record or anything like that. So yeah, it was one of those life experiences, yeah.
Yeah. So from your time then, we were talking off camera about your prolific goal scoring.
Yeah.
Abilities prior to coming to Blues.
Yeah.
And you were a central midfielder originally. So how did you kind of find your time in centre mid goal scoring before you came here?
Yeah, well, I always sort of pride myself on being really fit. And that was one of my strengths as well. One thing I made sure when I came to Blues, no one was going to be fitter than me. So we would do like a 3-mile run. They wouldn't do it nowadays because of health and safety, etc. So come out of West Hills and you go out and you turn to the left, get to the roundabout and go down towards, as if you're going to Barnt Green, yeah, down to the hotel, left, back up, round the lanes, 3-mile run. And I'd do that in like 18:26. That was my record, I think, at the time. That was often one of the runs challenge or the test that they do for us. So I was a really fit lad from a young age, always enjoyed cross country. And yeah, running through, I was a box to box, bit of a Frank Lampard, if you like. So I'd arrive late in the box and I'd pride myself 70 minutes to 90, most of my goals would be scored. And I can remember playing for Yeovil and I got 16 goals in that season when I got my move here eventually. I can remember even saying to centre midfielders, I'm going again. I was that arrogant and I knew I was that fit in a good way. Yeah. I'd say to him, you're not going to catch me, I'm gone again. And yeah, through my early days, that was very much my strength. And growing up and people knew that of me. So technically, I always said I wasn't the best player in the world. Obviously, you have to be to get to this level, but I really pride myself on my fitness. And I think that was the one that got me most goals. Bath City, for sure. Before I moved to Yeovil, I got sold for $9,500 back in the day, 95, 96. And this is where there's a bit of discrepancy in my move here because there was a clause in my contract from Bath Yeovil. If I was to move on from Yeovil, there was a sell on and they had a fee in it. So if you remember, Howard Torrington suddenly became, yeah, part of the deal. And that came,
was.
And it came from nowhere, that one. And it was almost, if Howard don't go, there's no deal. And I was like, Howard, come on, mate, you are gonna go. Because H wasn't like passionate about football. He'll understand what I'm saying to him. It was my life. And H was an academic and he was going through a different spell in his life for what he wanted. And I was like, H, come on, mate, we got to go. And
that's a big thing then to come up here from, if you're not really into it, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. And I'm not saying he wasn't into it. I was really anal. I was like, football was my life. I lived and breathed football and I still do. So whereas he went through an academic route, I never did. I wasn't big about school and stuff like that. It was all sport for me. So when the fee was done, it was $100,000, I think, we came for the joint fee. Suddenly it was Hay who ended up the bigger part of the fee and I was a smaller part.
Not Bath. Bath.
Yeah, exactly. And Bath now still, I mean, obviously as I went back as manager, it still spoke about as well that there was something there that wasn't quite right. But obviously, thank God we did get the move in the end and ended up here.
So tell us how that came about. We're talking before, weren't we, the semi-pro England team,
yeah,
and the trials. And yeah, this is where Blues picked you up, you gained their attention, was it?
It was, yeah. So best season of football. I made a decision to leave Bath. I'd been there for like 5 seasons, 200 odd games. It was my club, really. And I had some fantastic times, some really good cup runs. But the club was sort of going down. It wasn't, money was going out of the club. We were Gem Vauxhall Conference, so the top flight in non-league football. Yeah. And Yeovil, believe it or not, we're a level below. So it was like National League South, step two now. So Graham Roberts tapped me up during an FA Trophy game, actually. Bath played Yeovil, and from a corner, he asked me if I fancied it next season. So when you see Graham Roberts, you go, yeah, all right, because you're not marking me, mate. You're going to do me. Excuse me. Yeah, so after that game, he did call me, and it was mid-season. And I said, yeah, I do. I fancy coming. So I went down to Yeovil, which is a fantastic football club, one of the best clubs in non-league football, and it's got a good history of FA Cup runs, obviously. Mm-hmm. So went down there, and I just, from day one, really, it was like my perfect year. So scored 16 goals, got selected for the England non-league team, played over in Dublin against Republic of Ireland, got my England cap and all my England shirt and stuff framed, which is a dream again for a lad at 26 then. You think, well, so many people are saying, you're not going to make it. You've had your time. You've not been in the academy. Mm-hmm. So, really, really, really good season. And then a few clubs come in for me. Graham pulled me in. He said, look, you've got a few clubs that are in for you. This is around Christmas time. And I think Trevor had come, yeah, he did. Trevor come down with McMills and watched a top of the table clash, played Enfield. So there was 8,500 at step two football at Yeovil, 1,000 locked out, and we drew 2-2. It was first and second in the league. And after that, Trevor said, look, we'd like to have a look at him in our environment. Back in the day, you go on trial. So I came up here, I played against Man United at Berry's Ground. I played against Leicester at Filbert Street. And I played against Sheffield Wednesday at Hensford. So we played a lot of the reserve games at Hensford back in the time. Reggie Blinker playing for Sheffield Wednesday. Right. I remember the Man United, Phil Neville was playing in that one as well. But I was fortunate because I come up here and there's no real pressure on me. So I had a really good job. I was a salesman for golf course and sports ground equipment, earning good money. I was a really good club in Yeovil, enjoying football, best I've ever enjoyed my football. And I thought, you know what, I can go and there's no pressure on me. So I came up here, played the three games, played really well, did obviously played well enough.
Was centre mid? You still playing centre mid then?
No, Trevor then saw me as a right back. So it's around the time where right backs and full backs suddenly started to bomb on a little bit. And that's what I was. I was very athletic. I was a modern day fullback, if you like. I loved to get forward.
Yeah.
Wholehearted, loved to tackle, which the Blues fans love. So that was part of my makeup. And I could strike a really good ball and cross it really well. So that sort of suited me. So, yeah, I think I played right midfield in one of them. Can't remember which one, but then played right back. And then obviously they said, yeah, we'd like to offer you a deal. So, which was weird then because it was around Christmas time. And so what was agreed was that I'd finish the season at Yeovil because they were trying to win the league, which we did in the end, and got promoted to the National League with 103 points or something like that. But I'd had an agreement and signed my contract with Birmingham City as well. So obviously that's tough because you're thinking you don't want to get injured. Mm-hmm. What happens if I get injured? Does that contract, I was pretty naive to it or never had an agent. And the long and short of it is I end up, Trevor made contact with Graham. He said he wants to speak to you. You've got to go up. You've got to do a medical. So I did a medical over here, touched my toes a couple of times, a couple of sprints with Neil McDiarmid and that was it. Passed through the medical. There's no screening or anything like that. And then I had to go to Trevor's and agree the contract, which is really good, really unique. I ended up going to Trevor's house in Wentworth Golf Club. In fact, I just saw Bruce Forsyth's place, God rest his soul. Trevor lived next door to him. And Trevor, at his pretentious best, would want to say that and show off that. And I mean that in a really nice way. Trevor would, when I arrived, I had a Peugeot 306, I think diesel, and smoke blown out the back. And I turn up at Wentworth Golf Club and I'm down this drive and there's white stones whiter than this tabletop. And I'm looking out thinking, oh my God, it's leaking all over his stones. And I get to the bottom and I open these grand doors and out walks Trevor Francis. And for me, that's like incredible, incredible.
Did Bruce stick his head out next door and say, nice to see you?
Yeah, nice to see you, Nice, good one, mate, like that. Out comes and then Helen come out. Thank God Helen come out because I was so nervous, obviously. You're meeting Trevor Francis for the first time, really. And pictures of all his career up on the wall. And I remember the shag pile carpet. It was like that thick of my shoe, like disappeared in the carpet. I've never seen carpets like it in my life. So I walk in and she comes out. She says, do you want some orange juice, Helen? And do you want some croissants? And I'm, yeah. So we're talking like that. And my mouth was that dry. So only had the orange juice, didn't have the croissant. And Trevor then said, I'll come out of the back garden. I'm like, all right. So I got my best trousers on, shine my shoes up. He said, should I kick him out? I think, what? So there's James and there's Matt, his two boys. And they were really young at the day. He said, come on, boys, we'll have a game of football. So I'm now thinking, am I on trial? Is this like, is Trevor now giving me a trial in his back garden? I think if I don't do well here, my contract's going to be crap. So I end up having a little kick around and my shoes are getting dirty and I think, oh, for God's sake. So
going back to that chat, you didn't look really excited, 2 foot tackle all of them.
No, I probably didn't do that. No, so yeah, and then he said, look, like, come into my office, and I then went in, sat in Trevor's office with him, and he was like, listen, the man was, for someone like that, for me to be sat at his house talking about signing a contract for Birmingham City Football Club, it's what dreams are made of. And yeah, later on in life, he sort of invited me to his place in Marbella when Helen went so well and things like that. When we were on holiday out there, I just found out through a friend that he was having a barbecue, and I got an invitation to go around his house. And my two boys are then playing football with Trevor Francis in his place in Marbella and things like that. So listen, the guy, he took me from non-league football. I think I'm the only player that he signed from non-league football at 27. You know, that's...
It's unheard of, isn't it?
Yeah, 27. So for a guy, you know, Trevor Francis, you know, England international, illustrious career, for him to take a chance and a really good knowledge of the game. People speak a lot about Trevor. What was he like as a manager? I would say he wasn't a great man manager. He'd find it really difficult to pull individuals and tell them not playing or explain why they're not playing and what they needed to work on. What Trevor was really good at was demoing still. So he would, you know, for crossing and finishing exercise wasn't so good, even at 54, 55, whatever he was, he'd go out and whip unbelievable balls. And he'd tell you it as well. That was the thing. And we'd be like, oh, Jesus Christ, why can't we do that? But
is that hard, though? Is that hard for the team in general? Especially if it's, let me show you how to do it. And if you could do that, you'd be doing it. But especially when your manager then, and obviously he's a legend.
Yeah.
To just be kind of like, now look, with the imposter syndrome then, or inferiority complex.
Yeah.
So yeah, all right, you're much better than me. I can't do that.
Yeah. And it, you know, listen, the skill of a coach or a manager that I've learned now in my managerial and coaching is to break it down and try and teach that to a player. So that's what we needed, you know. Mm. We're playing the championship. It might sound a bit weird, but you still need to be coached. And there might be drills that you need to go a bit better on. And naturally, that was one of my strengths. I love crossing the ball. Nicky Eden was great at that. Maka, you know, we were really good. We had some good lads who delivered. Stan was incredible off the left side doing it. But you'd have to practice it, back and practice it every day. And that's why he was so good at taking his free kicks. But Trevor very much be that. And I think that was his bit where he wanted to show off, really. It wasn't so much about, I just want to show off because I'm so good. And that's fine. That's what I'm saying. So for me to be signed for Birmingham City by a Birmingham City legend, England legend, and a man that's had such a good career, God rest his soul, he played a massive part of my career, obviously, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Trevor Francis.
What was it like then? So what was it like stepping in? You mentioned imposter syndrome just before.
Yeah.
Who's you knocking around with? Who did you kind of gravitate to? Who's changing room dynamics like when you got here?
Yeah. Obviously, really nervous young man, I say then, because I was a late developer, not only in personality, I think I was as well. So coming in, there was that. So I'm walking into a dressing room and a lot of Barry's ex-players were still here. So when Trevor had only really taken over, I came in, there was like Anders Limpar, Dave Barnett, Andy Legg, Jason Bowen, all in reserves at Birmingham City Football Club. And that was a splinter group. So, you know, we call it the unclean group or whatever you call it. You know, that was the group. And I first come in and I'm part of that because I know I'm not going to be in the first team to start with. Lads, I think it took me a good 9 months to get anywhere near me believing I was good enough for this level. And I don't say that lightly. It took a lot of practice. It took a lot of social skills, a lot of mental strength. But I sort of attached myself to the younger ones when I came up to John Bass, Steve Robinson, Chrissy Holland, Craig Hinton. They're all part of that group. John was obviously a West Country boy as well from Western Supermare, playing the same position, ironically, and I ended up taking over, playing it right back. Really good lads. All live locally. We had a social together. We were really professional lads. We were so driven. We made ourselves really fit. That reserve side was really fit. And we played some really, it's tough then. Reserve games were tough games. You're playing against men. It wasn't like the 23s is now. And we played Birmingham Senior Cup games and things like that. And we won that one year as well.
I won that, didn't you?
Yeah, we won that. So yeah, there was some, and then there was that senior group, you know, with your Martin O'Connor's in it. And obviously, and that who I speak to now, and today he still gives me great advice, Skip, on things around me, managerial stuff. He was loans manager here up until recently. So I spoke to him a lot, about football. Michael Johnson, all them lot, really good lads. And it took me a while to break into that. But once I got into it, I sort of moved away from, I'm not a reserve player anymore. You're part of this first team group and you believe you are. And of course, playing games give you confidence. And obviously making my debut, which I remember so vividly here against Swindon Town, was my debut in the end.
Was that 3-0?
Yeah, it's 3-0. So Trevor didn't want to tell me in training. He did that for the right reasons, because I'd moved into an apartment in Dickens Heath. And I look back on it now, and what I did, I exerted so much nervous energy. So after a training session on a Friday, if I did know I was playing, I'd turn my phone off. I wouldn't speak to anyone on a Friday. No one could get hold of me. I'll be zoned in on a Friday night, when looking at it now, it's probably the worst thing you can do. You need to be relaxed. You need to be doing the normal things. That's how I certainly was to start with. So he called me on the way in from training and said, you're playing tomorrow, by the way, against Swindon. You're making your debut at home at St Andrews. Do you want to let your family know? So all my family from the West Country have to let know. I'm like, wow. I then look up who's playing left wing for Swindon. It's Mark Waters. And then I think, oh, shit. So Mark Waters, me remembering Mark Waters, is just step overs, jinky. I'm thinking, right, I'm going to have to smash him early. That's all I kept thinking to myself. And I did.
Good for you.
Yeah. And I think the Blues fans will probably remember it. And that's when maybe that Jerry shake may have started, from that time, the minute I nailed Mark Waters. And that got me in the game. So played. Bear in mind, I'm making debut alongside Steve Bruce inside me at centre-back, Gary Ablett, God rest his soul, at left centre-back, Martin Granger at left-back, Ian Bennett in goal, Martin O'Connor in front of me. So you're talking of some absolute seasoned pros. Steve Bruce was phenomenal, and he continued to be phenomenal throughout my career, even when I snapped my cruciate, when I went to Northampton, we'll talk about, as a man's man. So he was the opposite to Trevor. He was a really good man manager, and he was really honest, really upfront. So obviously, before the game, I'm thinking, right, I'll just echo everything he does. He's the ultimate professional. I'll watch how he warms up. He didn't warm up. So he stayed in the dressing room, and he ran the bath, and he got in the bath, and he had a hot bath.
You're getting next to you.
And I'm doing doggies, I'm doing art, I'm doing blocks, and I'm doing everything. I'm using so much energy, and I'm thinking, is this what you're were you supposed to do that? I don't know what you're supposed to do. So I went out, did a warm-up. And he might have come out for 5 minutes and then gone back in, but he pulled me. And it was a really nice thing, actually. He said, look, listen, congratulations. Know what you've done, your journey. It's come from non-league to make your league debut in the championship. It's fantastic. He said, you leave my side once here today. He said, you will know about it. He said, anything over the top, you're chasing. Anything in front in distance, you're chasing. You stay by my side. Everything else I'll deal with on my chest. And if you remember how he played, he'd read everything. Any ball that come across on his chest, he'd bring it down. He'd ping it. He'd play it there easy to me. Anything behind him, I'm running. So I was on a bungee rope. And I was like, yeah, I'm definitely doing that for you. No problem. You're Steve Bruce. I'm Jerry Gill from non-league. I'll do it. And I'm running around like a lunatic. But joking aside, he was the whole game. He was like that, talking me through. And as you know, listen, you're being coached in a championship game, basically. So
for the best.
Was Steve like that then? He could see he was going to coach, and he leaned that way.
Yeah, he was a coach and playing in a men's team. And listen, he deserves a lot of respect, because I think he didn't take his testimony, did he, at Man United to come here and play, I think, and came down. I think a lot of us fed off that, as well as players, you know, a man of that experience and that ability, that quality. I always speak of him very highly whenever people ask me what he was like. So, of course, he became my manager, and in the end, I left. And we had an honest conversation about it, but we'll come on to that. But that debut gave me the confidence then to go, you know, you win the game. It could have gone so different, couldn't it? You know, what happens if you lose a game and you have a bad game and Mark Waters destroys you? I think from the minute I nailed him to the minute the crowd got behind me, and you know what it's like here. When the crowd gets behind you and they take you. And the rapport I had with these fans was just incredible. I've never experienced anything like it in my life. And people always talk about it, the Jerry shout. And I spoke about it, you remember Crew Away? Dale was talking to me about it. It echoed around in that little shed everywhere. That for me is what football's all about. And from that moment on, my confidence just went up and up. And I know I went in and out of the team, but whenever I played, I felt as if I could do it at championship level.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at that time, it was when Rabbit signed for quite big money, wasn't it, as well? So 1 million or something, wasn't it, from Derby?
Yeah.
So then how do you kind of exert yourself? Because I know there was a lot of quotes from Trevor France at the time, essentially saying, you're too nice. He doesn't know. Maybe if he was a bit meaner, or, you know, he knocked on the door and shouted at me, play more. Mm. What's that like? How do you kind of process that when you are that person, not that way inclined, that you're going to go shouting and bawling, just trying, you know, you want to let your football do the talking. How do you stay kind of?
That's a good point. And looking back, I probably was. And it's often the idiots or the swats, if you want to call them, or I call them, whatever you want to call them, unprofessional, whatever you want to call them, they're the ones who end up get paid out of contracts as well. So I never got paid up from a contract, apart from when I left Birmingham City to go to Northampton, because I knew Premier League then. Steve had an honest conversation with me about that. But going back to it, it was very much, I played and I gave 100% every time I played for Birmingham City Football Club. Now, at times I might have been let down by the odd pass or whatever, and we all make mistakes and it happens. But I always felt as if there was that thing at times that Gerrard's come from non-league, so the easy thing is to leave him out, when actually probably I didn't deserve to be at times.
And we know he won't kick off.
Yeah, exactly. So I wouldn't ever want to upset the apple cart, because I was really grateful for what I had. Looking back at it, I probably should have been. I probably should have gone and said, no, hang on a minute, I shouldn't be coming out of the team then. That should be me. And the biggest moment was the one we'll talk about. It should never have happened. But in turn also, Gary Rowett was probably one of the best right backs any Championship club are going to sign. And it was Gaz who did that article, actually. It wasn't Trevor so much. It was Gaz come out, Gary Rowett come out and said, "Well, Gerry deserves to be in this team. He won't go knock on the door. He won't kick up a fuss. He's the ultimate professional." My answer was roll my sleeves up and train even harder. And I still believe that today. So, and I coach that and I teach that. So many kids now are, oh, it's not my fault. It's his fault. And it's not that. And it's the manager's fault. Well, actually, look at yourself. And that's all I ever did. I looked at myself, evaluated, and I said, you know what? I'm not going to come in and have a grumpy face on. I'm going to put a smile on my face. I'm not going to be happy, because there's a difference between being, you know, really down on yourself and come in and you're negative and you don't train well. And so many people I see like that, they come in and they tossed off training. I'm not going to do that. I'll train even harder. And I'll roll sleeves up. And I saw so many right backs off because of that. They come in and go, and Trevor would go, and the staff would go, bloody hell, hang on a minute, he's doing even more here, so we can't leave him out. So I think Gary was an exceptional one, because he never got injured. He was good in the air. He was great at getting forward. He was great in 1v1 defending. And it proved that, because he went on and had a really illustrious career and a really good managerial career as well now. And credit to him. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit in it, a tinge in it, where I should have probably been a bit more forthright in going in and saying that I don't deserve to be dropped. But
yeah,
also, I'd never changed myself, because that was the way I was.
Because around that time, obviously, Gary coming and going. And then Nicky Eden, who again, at that time,
yeah,
was a great defender, wasn't he, in the Championship? At right back, he was one of the best around. But then you got the opportunity then, in the run, kind of the run up to the Women's Cup final.
Yeah,
didn't put a foot wrong, kind of culminating in. So the first leg, you never played against Ipswich. Steve Jenkins played against Ipswich, but you were back in then for the home leg.
Yeah,
did you play in like a back three then? What was your position in that Ipswich game?
Back four. Just right back four. Yeah, I was right back. I was probably doing loads of covering again, was I? Early on, yeah. I mean, that season, don't forget, I played my most in the Championship. 30-odd games, I think, I'd played. So I was established. I was a Championship right back. And actually, me and Nick Eden were a great partnership. And Nick talks about it all the time. There was me and Macca at times as well. But obviously, when Macca broke his leg,
yeah,
me and Nicky formed that really good partnership. John McCarthy was one of the best, and in Nicky, to have playing in front of you. Macca would do so much work, and he spoke about it that way as well as that way. You could give him the ball and you'd know he'd be good in a 1v1. He'd be really direct, but such an honest player. Nicky was more like a right back playing right midfield. So we'd dovetail each other. So literally I'd go forward, Nicky would sit in, and vice versa. And we had such a good understanding. He was one of the best crosses of the balls I've ever played with. He understood soft sets back to me, and I'd want to deliver all those little technical bits.
Yeah.
We had such a good partnership, and really honest kid, real down-to-earth lad, and great, great human being as well, Nicky. And yeah, so that run-in was perfect. Here, obviously I played in all the other games, all the run-up, you know, you play at Tottenham away. I remember Dealey destroying Raymond Vega.
Yeah.
Down at Tottenham. Terrible. Ironically, Trevor would play me in a lot of the big games. I play some massive games for Birmingham City, playing the Newcastle game here, playing the West Ham game, playing the Sheffield Wednesday game here again in it. Some massive games. After the Wins and Cup, he plays me at Crystal Palace away at left back. Some massive, massive games I play in, ironically. And he always trusted me in it. So the game here, we talk about Marcus Stewart. So there's a big bit going up, two West Country lads going out. They were a Premier League team.
Yep.
We obviously have lost 1-0 in the first half.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Doing so well. Mm-hmm. I had such a good side. And Stewie, Marcus Stewart was playing up top. The Sun did a double spread. I got it. Me, one side, and Stewie, the other, two West Country lads going at it tonight at St Andrews with an opportunity to play in a major cup final. And he'd never had, and obviously I'd never had, and Birmingham City hadn't for 30-odd years. So it was a massive thing, that. The one thing I got to say about it, and everyone talks about it, first thing is that build-up into that game was phenomenal. You could feel it. Something special was going to happen. And I knew I was playing. And I'm in that tunnel over there, and the place was absolutely shaking. I don't think there's been a game. I talked to many fans. There's not been many games here since that atmosphere was ridiculous that night. It was packed. And as we're coming out, the whole, it's almost like it's an earthquake. Everything's rumbling, everything's shaking. The pitch was horrific, if you remember. I mean, horrific. We were lucky to get it on, which actually probably suited us a bit. We were pragmatic.
Well, I said Trevor made it like that because Portland Road then was like a carpet and they were a passing side and we just wanted to make it a bit uglier and leveler in it.
Yeah. And I guess he picked his honest players in that as well. So, and I felt as if I was one of them. So, yeah, I remember as far side down there, over the far side, corner comes in and in front of the tilt and I'm on the far post. I was always on the far post. Headers come in and I've just reacted and I've lifted my knee up and my knee and I've cleared off the line after the first, I don't know, 10 minutes, was it something like that?
That would have made it 2-0, wouldn't it?
2-0.
Challenge
of Donna. That would have been big. And then obviously them play a big part in some of the game. All I can remember is just delivering balls forward to Dealey and to Jeff, and Dealey was starting to batter people. And I think with a goal where he'd come out, he'd saved it and Jeff slid it underneath him down here. I'd pumped that ball. I remember it bobbling up at me in the middle of the pitch and I've like just put it back into an area. It's gone up in the air high. It's landed, it's fallen. And then he's had that shot. He's come back out and he's finished it.
Yeah.
And obviously the memories of AJ when Richard Wright misses that and being sworn. I mean, I was this side, obviously, and the whole, you must have been in it.
Yeah.
It felt like the whole of the stand had just gone on the pitch and we're just mobbed in that famous saying, open the M5, Blues are coming to Cardiff or something like that. Can you remember the commentary on that night? It's
every time it's mentioned, you get all of it.
Oh, honestly.
Did you speak to Marcus after?
Yeah, I spoke to Stewie. Yeah, I mean, listen, he was distraught. He's going for a real, real tough time now. He's got MND. God bless him. He's really struggling, and but he's doing it really well. He's fighting the good cause, and yeah, I want to send my support out to him here and now on that because we've seen people like Rob Burrows go through that as well. So Stu is suffering with that, but he's a real positive guy, and I see him.
He was, by the way,
goal scorer.
Because I heard that he almost came here through Barry Fry, didn't he?
Yeah,
and that get curtailed at the last minute. Back one of the deals before he got sacked.
Yeah, I would have thought so. Because there was a little West Country connection with Blues Julian Dixon. People, obviously, this club here is one of the biggest, nearest clubs for us in West Country, lads. So, great guy, and he was distraught because that would have been a major cup final for Stewie as well. And we knew what was at stake that night, and he's a really respectful guy. So I wish him all the best, obviously, in that, and then. Again, I remember the night we all went out then in town because if you don't celebrate those nights, you're never going to do it. And we had the Lecoq Sportif kit, you remember? And it was Lecoq Sportif tracksuits. You look back on them, they were like double XL, all of them. So like, well, I don't know if it's coming back in fashion now, isn't it? The old baggy stuff. Yeah. So I can remember being out in town. We're all in the Lecoq Sportif tracksuits. And I remember getting some dodgy chicken on the way home with Stan Lazarides back to Dickens Heath. And then we have to go on ITV News, local news, on the night afterwards, at 6 o'clock, and of course, we've all hung over, and I've got the footage now. So we're around Grange's. So there's Grange, Stan and myself were on the sofa and they come round and they're interviewing us and we're all ashen, complete ashen like that. And we're trying to be positive.
We thought you'd look happier.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, we're all talking about what had happened the night before. And no one can ever take that one away from me. That was some special night, that was.
What was the call then for the final? How did he approach you? If he wasn't the person, the manager that does that, what was the talk through it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've never really had a conversation with Trevor since about it, you know, when he was here. I probably didn't ever want to, really. I mean, obviously I'd spent some time, as I said, I was at a barbecue in Marbella, and probably might have been a right time to ask, sit him down and say what really went on. Jim Barron, who's part of the staff as well, was my assistant at Bath City not so long ago. So I've stayed in touch with Jim. He's 81 now, by the way.
Aye.
And he's doing unbelievable. He looks remarkable and he's a great guy. And he played a major part in my career as well here because he'd take me for extras in the afternoons. People don't see this sort of stuff at West Deals when I wanted to go and improve on bits. The staff that would go out their way, Ian Bowyer, Mick Mills, would go out their way to help you. And Jim was massive in that for me. He'd take me and improve me a lot. So he's part of the staff. So I've never really got to the bottom of it as such. But of course we went down on the Thursday, I don't know if you remember. So the final was on the Sunday, wasn't it?
Mm.
So we go down, we're staying at Saint-Pierre Golf Club. So we're all in there and we have loads of training sessions. And I think Macca spoke about it. Macca didn't know until the Sunday that he was playing, literally as we're getting on the coach. I think
he was hoping for bench.
Yeah,
said, wasn't
I? Exactly. And I think that's Trevor because again, wanted to avoid that confrontation. Cause even though I wasn't that type, I think if it was for a major cup final, and I would have probably reacted totally different.
So just to interject there. So you are a Liverpool fan as well, aren't you?
Massive
Liverpool fan.
Massive, huge. So 1970 born, 77, my first recollection of real football, European Cup final. Last game for Blues Anfield, nice story, in the Cup. But even though we lost up there playing with a really strong side, and we played against Nicholas Anelka and Michael Owen were up top. So anyway, we'll come back to that. But we move. So I don't know if you remember, all the Blues came to Cardiff, and they were in Cardiff like 2 days before. All I remember, the city was blue. And I know Cardiff is blue, but it was carnage. Can you remember the Myrtle Ways were struggling? It was a nightmare. So all coming down. We're doing shape throughout the week, usual stuff. I'm in it. I'm out of it. I'm in it. Macca's in it. We're all in it. So Trevor never gave it away. Excuse me. So we don't really know. We then get a lot of disruption at Saint-Pierre in the hotel. So Trevor says, we're going to move. We're going to go to another hotel. So he takes us up into the valleys, into a new hotel. We actually have to move hotels because it's too rowdy, too many Blues around. And obviously, naturally, he wanted it quiet for us. And all I remember is, and there's some pictures of us now coming out of the hotel with suits, and I'm carrying my boots and things like this. And I'm about to get on the coach, and he pulls me, literally, as I'm getting on the coach.
So in the hotel?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, okay. So he goes, Jerry, not going to play today. So I'm in shock. What do you mean? Well, I just feel like we're going to play Macca there. I need a winger, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And he couldn't really expect. I wasn't listening at that point. So I thought, well, I'm going to be on the bench minimum here, so I might have an opportunity still to come on. He said, you're not going to be on the bench? I said, pardon? Not even on the bench? He said, no, I'm going to put a centre-back. You remember David Holdsworth was out as well?
Wouldn't feel either, though.
And played at all. And Reg ends up getting on the bench because he said he wanted a centre-back on the bench, which is, for me, even though I got so much respect for Trevor, I think it's a load of bullshit. Because again, this was the old, it's an easy option. Do we play John McCarthy or Jerry? Whether that was tactically, whatever he may have thought, and Macca said it here and now, and you don't mind me saying it, he wasn't right. He wasn't fit. He wasn't able to play to his best capability. And that's no disrespect to Macca. I was fighting fit. David Holds was centre-back. What difference does that make, putting a centre-back? And I know Reg would probably kicked up a fuss more than me, and that my relationship may have been closer. So, of course, I'm on the coach now. Bearing in mind, I've got 80 coming across in the West Country. So I'm now on the coach, going down, I've gone. So I know I'm in tears, and that's why I said bring the tissues today, joking aside, because I wry smile about it, but it does upset me. Generally, it upsets me. Even to this day, it upsets me. And if I see Blues fans, it's the first thing they say, Jerry, what the hell happened? What happened with Trevor Francis? And people know it was the wrong decision. And I'm not being big-headed about that. Please don't think I am.
Well, us as supporters can't understand the logic behind it.
So get to the Millennium, and I walk out, and this is the worst bit. I walk out, and I've got the big program. Remember the big green program? Got that in my hands. Walk out. What a stadium, wasn't it? Unbelievable. And I look up, and I see all my family. This is, you know, in our suits, and we walk out like you're going to a major cup final, all the stuff you dream of. See all my family, and I couldn't ring them. So I didn't have a chance to ring them because I'm going to the ground, and they're like, and I'm going, I'm putting my thumbs down, I'm going like that. And then, of course, they don't really understand what's going on. So I've gone, I'm in tears. And I remember Martin O'Connor walking across, and he's like, mate, he said, lads are with you here. I don't know what's going on. Like, come on, just, I said, I'm going home. So I'm going to get a taxi. I said, I'm going to go back to Solihull. I'm going to go back, or I'm going to go to the West Country. He said, Gilly, don't. You'll regret it for the rest of your life. I said, no, Matt, what's the point of me being here? I said, I'm not part of it. I don't feel part of it. He said, you're part of it. Honestly, stay. You're part of the lads. We want you here. I stay in the end. I'm glad I did. But I remember stood behind, so I went on the bench, but I was behind the bench, sat. And the national anthem comes on. That's worse then. So you stood the national anthem, you're still in your suit and things like that. And obviously, if I'm being honest, I don't remember much of the game because I was in a bit of a daze. And I know for Blues fans, it was a great day and all that sort of stuff and really good memories. We understand what happened and how it ended and things like that. So for me, it's a tough one. It's still a tough one to talk about because that should be one of my best memories in my career. I've had a lot of really good memories and a lot of stuff to be really grateful for, but that one I think was unjust, and I think that one should never have ended up the way it did end up. But football's football, and what I did was after that, I rolled my sleeve back up, and I literally did. So I went back in on the Monday. I think I played at Crystal Palace away in a league game, whether that was a game after or a few after. Trevor had put me straight back in, played at left back.
No follow-up conversation to that?
Nothing.
Did it change your relationship with Trevor at all?
No.
Or your...
No.
Respect, not respect, but like the whole, it was just business as usual, roll your sleeves up and go on with it.
I wouldn't let it.
No.
Honestly, I wouldn't let it. That's not me. I couldn't do it. That's as far as, and I know players do that. I know people throw the things out of the pram, toys out of the pram. And I love my profession. I love my club. I love Birmingham City Football Club. It's my club. So there's no way I wasn't going to give it all. They're paying my money at the end of the day, my wages, and I respect that. So I think that comes from my non-league mentality as well.
Yeah.
I think that's where it comes from. My upbringing, my parents wouldn't allow me to be like that. And if I was, and I look back on that, I'm telling that story now, it's different. I'd be gutted. I really would. So, yeah, I got on with it, got back in the side. Ironically, played loads of games then after in the Championship. And, end of that season, I remember we had a do at the Metropole, I think it was. I think it might be the Metropole. It might be the Indoor Arena. Probably Metropole. And ironically, Trevor gives me Clubman of the Year. And that people say that's a nice thing. But Clubman of the Year, not for me. It was a little bit, so I've got a big award. The only good thing that came out of it is I got a really nice watch from Mappin & Webb. So Mappin & Webb that night, shout out to you guys, Mappin & Webb. They gave me a wonderful watch that I've still got. And it's still going. It's worth a fortune, so that's good. And it's nice.
Clubman.
It's Clubman.
No one
really wants that. So
I'm not on the back of that as well.
No. I think Trevor's way of saying sorry, but Trevor didn't know how to say sorry.
It's like a pat on the head, isn't it?
It is. It is a bit. It is a bit that way. So, listen, in the end of the day, all I've got to think about and be positive about is the way the fans saw it and the way people who really knew. So my teammates, your peers, they understood it.
1,000,000%, yeah.
I mean, John McCarthy did be sat here the other week. Thanks, John, by the way. The way he spoke about it is credit to him as well, because he understood it. And he could easily sit here and go, well, I bet playing a Gilly and Nicky and whatever, and I should have been playing. And like, he understood it. And
and he's not that guy.
Credit to John. Mm-hmm. Credit to him. And
what was the medal thing then? It was literally while we were doing a bit more digging on it, about the runners-up medal. You didn't get one on the day or?
No.
Was only once Trevor had gone?
Yeah.
And they kept one back?
Alan, the secretary. So, so I never got a medal. So again, on the day, I'm thinking, well,
hang on. I had the run-up.
Every single round. And apart from that, you know, the one we talk about, Ipswich, but I played every round.
Yeah.
Build up, and the biggest game in the history of the football club at that time, and I didn't get a medal. So at that point, you think, well, come on, Trevor, you should have sorted that. If I'm a manager of my team, Bow City, and I haven't done that for a lad who's been left out of the squad, I'm not doing my job here. So yeah, and in the end, I got presented it after Trevor had gone. And thankfully, I've got it, and I deserve it. Definitely, I deserve it. I've got Patrick Berger's shirt because I think he was left out of the squad, or he was ill that day. Maybe, I think, can't remember. I've got his shirt. I've got my Worthington Cup shirt, obviously, and I've got the programme. There's a nice piece of me in the programme building into it, and the medals in there as well, which I deserve. Definitely, I deserve. But again, yeah, that don't really understand why that didn't happen.
So mad.
Mm. Okay, tell you another story. When I headbutted Pescalido, Fulham away. Can you remember that?
Huh?
On a Tuesday night. Oh yeah.
I came
on a sub. I got a picture of it. I'll send you afterwards.
Yeah.
You put it on. I'll tell the story. We'll tell the story. You know with the bits you flash up.
Yeah.
So we go away. We drew. I think it's 0-0 the game.
God,
away at Fulham.
Go on.
I can't remember what year. You'll find it again. And I go on his sub, and it's 0-0 tight Championship game. I think we might be fourth in the Championship that night. And I go in for a tackle, and I catch him as well on the edge of the box. It's near the last minute. Fucking, he goes over and he's squealing on the floor. Ref blows for a foul. It's never a foul. Of course, my head's thinking, fuck's sake, I've cost us here. If they go and score from this, Trevor's going to go fucking apeshit. Fourth in the Championship, 0-0 away at Fulham's a good result. He gets up, I go, you little fucking shithouse. My galactics go, bang. The fucking paper's caught me, mate. My head's like that. I've got it. Right? I think it's in the mirror on the Sunday. And I'm like that. And he's going back like this. So she phones up. Karen phones up Trevor. Says, I'm not happy with Jerry Gale. So what do you mean? He said, he's been in there by Paul. What the fuck? He said, I'm not having that. So Trevor pulls me and said, she ain't going to be happy, mate. She'll hold that against you. Hold a grudge against you. But I didn't know anything. Like, it went away.
Beautiful guys, I don't know.
Yeah. A little shit house,
hope. Yeah, if you'd have popped the note, got it all in.
Yeah, exactly, mate. Yeah. Good job he's only 5'8". Okay, at least I could go down on him. Like that. Literally. Bang. Have a bit of that. Oh, Jesus.
So, yes, you're not always a nice guy.
Listen, on the pitch, I wasn't. I turned into someone different on the pitch. Like Grange, we me and Granger got on really well. We were like best mates. My best mates were Martin Granger, Stan Lazaridis, Nick Eden, lads around Dickens East, Jeff Woodall guys.
Stan never had nothing about him though. He was like the loveliest man.
Just the loveliest. He was like the financial director of the coach. So he would like advise everyone on their finances. Oh yeah. So when I was buying me place in Dickens East, he'd tell me what one I'd have to get. And this would be a great investment for you in the future, Jerry. And
We might have to fly over to ours and do one of these.
Yeah, it'd be
quite expensive.
That'd be a blow, wouldn't it? A great guy though. Great guy. I mean, listen, we end up going around and a lot of family stuff as well. The two families, you know, I went across to Australia with my ex-wife Vicky, and we go to little Dior's christening out there and spend 5 weeks. Didn't go too down too well at the time. I didn't have kids at the time. So I'm just dating, and we go out. So we start in the Gold Coast, and I had a best friend in Melbourne as well. So I said to Vicky, we got there, we'll do 10 days in the Gold Coast. Stan sorted everything out for me. Of course he would, because he'd get the best prices. I think the pound was worth like three in Australia at the time, so you couldn't spend your money, so we're staying in the best places. I have 10 days. Of course, it's our summer, so it's our winter over there. So it's okay, it's nice, some lovely seafood restaurants. And I said to Vicky, I'll go and see Andy, my best mate. Go and see Andy in Melbourne. For, I'll give me one night. So she flies on down to Adelaide to meet up with Mary and Stan and all the Lazaridises, and I go out in Melbourne and I had an unbelievable night. Of course, not too good when I end up the next day in Adelaide. And then nightmare. So Greeks very much, it's very mafiosa, if you like. So men spend the time with the men and the women spend the time with the women. Well, for almost 2 weeks of holiday, Vicky's with the women cooking and folding napkins, and I'm out having coffees, playing golf and doing the nice things with the lads. In
You didn't arrange that with a prior?
No, exactly. No, of course I didn't.
I forgot to mention.
Exactly. Mafioso is what the Greeks do. You're sorry if it's not what the Greeks do. But no, listen, we ate really well out there, and Stan's brother-in-law had a seafood restaurant in Glen Elg in Adelaide, and I had a wonderful time out there. I ended up watching him actually in the World Cup qualifier in Sydney. They played against New Zealand, which was an experience. Football in Australia was weird. It was like golf hand claps when goals are going in.
Solihull Moors.
A little bit like the Moors. And then he had a friend who was a Greek billionaire. Of course he did. And he said, come down on his yacht in Sydney Harbour. So all these life experiences and things I'd never thought I'd have. And picturing me driving this yacht under the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And we're going on Greek radio live in a minute round Sydney. And yeah, we had some wonderful times, some really good teammates. And like I say, Grange was living in Hockley Heath, and we'd go over to the social club and play snooker and pool once or twice a week. And the two girls got on really well in the family growing up and stuff. And I still stay in touch with Grange now. So, and he was very much like me. I wasn't quite as dirty as him. Once he broke six legs and looked at his grip. Six legs. But I remember getting sent off at Plymouth once in a pre-season friend. I'm thinking, oh God, that's the last thing I needed, was because Trevor now will leave me out and get another bloody right back in. Yeah, you don't get sent off with such a two managers sort of spoke and said to the ref, you better get him off. I was just too excited to be playing in a game. But Grange away, I remember a nice story away at Gillingham, and this first time I saw Trevor half aggressive, really. We go away to Gillingham and in a championship game, and Grange is wound up. I remember it, and he gets sent off. And if you remember the game, he's probably spoke about it. He got sent off, horrendous, two tackles. And that's at half time, we're losing the game. We end up winning the game, but at half time, Trevor calls me and Grange a cheat. I'm thinking, two people you do not call a cheat is me and Grange. That's one thing we're not. So Grange gets up and has Trevor like that. And then Mills is coming across and we're all trying to pull him off him and stuff like that. So we'd all gone off in the dressing room. But that was what we were like. We were passionate lads. We had a lot about us as a group. We ended up winning that game and rolling our sleeves up again and going, right, we're going to win this. And that team spirit, that group, you'll find it hard to find a group like that again now. They've changed, players have changed. But like I said, I think it is a rapport between all of us, the fans, the players, the staff even.
There's a connection, wasn't there, throughout?
It made us. And yeah.
So moving on then, Steve comes in.
Yeah, no.
Yep. Go on.
No, I was going to say, yeah, so for that last game.
Yeah. Okay. Steve comes in and, yeah, how does he change and the dynamics? But it's not a hidden thing that he did go a bit stale, didn't it?
Yeah.
Trev and we were always kind of there and it needed the fresh injection, and Steve come in for obvious reasons. It changed. It took us through that period.
Yeah. So it did feel a bit like that. It felt like, I mean, my experience as Bath City manager, very similar, 7 years doing the same thing. You keep going to the well, you keep going to what's difficult. So Yeah, we did feel that, you know, four times, wasn't it, playoffs, trying to get there. Couldn't quite get there. There was a reason why we couldn't. What was it? Why were we not ever getting over the line? So I think probably a change was due. Steve come in and it did, you know, whatever we look at Carrick now in Man United, whatever it may be, whether you think it's tactically, I always think it's the feel. I think it's a feel around it.
Psychological.
It's that connection. It's that, I don't know, maybe just a couple of tweaks on ideas. People say it's tactical. Of course, there'll be stuff in that. But of course, he brought in some other players and it improved the squad a little bit. You know, I played a bit part after that and understand that. Steve was always very honest and the group got on that run and it was an unbelievable run. And you see it so many times. Once you've got momentum in football, it's a wonderful thing. And the spirit and the confidence was there. We knew the squad was good enough and he's added good players. Like Sir Jeff Kenner coming in, and that was difficult then for me. Obviously, he was slightly younger. Yeah, and
again, like you've always had those players come in, haven't you?
Yeah.
You can't really say, oh, you know. You know, you can work hard, but they are good players.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're good players. You can't knock that. And
can't be like, so-and-so's coming in. He knows him from that club. He's not very good. I should be ahead of him.
Yeah.
You have had to go up against some of the best fullbacks in the championship.
Yeah, that's it. And that's life. Life's about competition. You got most things in life's competition. You've got to compete. And you either embrace it or you don't. And I still embraced it. And it was just very much. But then Steve called me in after we got promoted. Obviously, it led to a promotion, obviously. I played a couple of games and then obviously I played it in the FA Cup game at Anfield that I spoke about, which was, do you know what? If there's a place for me to end up my last game for Birmingham City, it was my last kick of the ball for Birmingham City.
Yeah.
If it's going to be anywhere, it's not a bad one, is it? Anfield away in front of 44,000, 45,000, 5,000 blue noses. I get to touch this is Anfield on the way out, the only away player who did it. I noticed that, and I had to because bloody hell, come on. As you walk down there and I get an opportunity and I'm 32 then to go, yeah, touch that and I walk up and you see that. When you walk up at Anfield, you just see pitch level like that and you walk out and you see all our fans behind the goal. Of course, you see the cop and then you never walk alone coming out. Again, even though as a away player, hairs on the back of the neck. And Edison, we lose the game, I understand that.
What's the score then?
I think it's 3. It's 3-0, yeah. I think Anelka and Owen, bad partnership.
It wasn't that 7-0 or so.
No. It's like we were competitive in the game, but obviously we weren't ever, it never felt as if we were going to win that game.
Yeah, so you go out, you're buzzing to play, and then you've got an Anelka and Owen run the channel.
Exactly, and I think I had Smeetzer, and then he took him off, brought Berger on. So it's like, Jesus Christ.
Absolutely relentless.
But I played 90 minutes in that game. You know, I can't remember the game so much, how I did and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I got some lovely pictures of me and Michael Owen, the cop in the background, and Murphy playing Gerrard, and crikey, the names you're talking about there. Yeah. It's an unbelievable team. So that was my last kick of a ball for Birmingham City. Obviously, it went transpired then, and obviously I went down to Cardiff. This time was different because I am a squad. I just went in my suit, didn't travel with the squad. I went and watched it, so I wasn't part of the squad then. I was left out, but that was fine then. I knew that. I knew where I was. But I still stuck my suit on and I put a tie on and I went down and I supported it like any other blue nose.
Steve saying to you every time, this is that, he's pulling you and speaking to you. Man.
Well, not so much all the time, Kev. It was, I knew where I was and we both knew where we were really. And at that time I'm thinking, right, there's a few coming in loan. Do I go Peterborough, things like that. Baz was there and I think, and some other bits, but I wanted to stay with it. I wanted to make sure I was part of that group. I don't know how many games I played in that season. It was the season before where I played the 30, where it was I felt as if I was an established championship player. If you play 30 games in a season, it feels like you are.
Well, you are, aren't you?
Exactly. So, then it was, you know, you were enjoying it. I'm on the pitch. I did go on the pitch afterwards. I see some pictures where I'm there, but I'm not really there, if you know what I mean. I was pretty pleased for all the lads. Unbelievably buzzing for the club and for Steve. I really was. I wasn't bitter about anything. And then...
Do you feel like you're at the end of your time at that point?
I think so. I think kind of
an acceptance, yeah, rather than...
Although you still think, well, pre-season's coming now and Premier League, you're going back as a Premier League player. So pre-season then started, you go back in, but it's quite adamant then there was some bigger hitters coming in there. You then fall right down the pecking order. So I think it only took like 2 months or so and Steve pulled me and I think I might have gone and seen him. I said, look, obviously I'm 32. I'd love to be here. And he said, you might play some games, you might get a bit pipe, might get 5 here, whatever, I don't know. But if you want to go and play some football, no problem, I'll make it easy for you. So I did. I went to Northampton in League One. And at the time, we had a really good side. Marco Gabbadini, Martin Smith, Paul Trollope, one of my best friends in football, come from Fulham Premier League club on loan. Daryl Burgess, who I spoke to on Friday, obviously a bit of a legend over at West Brom. Chris Marsh, Walsall.
It's a great team.
Really good team we had over there. Fantastic
great
team.
Like Daryl Burgess, considering he was West Brom. He's
great lad.
He's an honest lad.
Great lad. He plays in the Blues former player association as well, so I'll put that out there. So he is a blue. I think he might be a blue nose, really. Deep down. And so, yeah, I went there and I played in League One, and Steve was, I went on loan first. So I thought, well, I'll go on loan, Steve. I'm not going to, in case you need me or whatever, call back, whatever, I'll go on loan. He's like, yeah, totally, no problem. Went and played, done really well. And then they wanted to turn it into a permanent deal. So I thought, do you know what, 32, League One, I might as well do this. So
What did it feel like compared to the Championship?
Yeah, completely different.
Yeah.
Completely different, yeah. It was, I wouldn't say easy, but it was.
You had the measure of it.
I was more comfortable with it, yeah. You're playing against players, obviously, of lesser ability. It wasn't quite so quick, wasn't so quite so robust. The Championship now still is still the same.
Yeah,
it's at it every single week, isn't it? You're playing Saturday, Tuesday. So, yeah, it was, and it felt nice. It was a smaller club, and I thought, do you know what? I really took to it. And again, I had a really good rapport with the fans. So we get to Easter, and I'm trying to talk. I end up getting my deal sorted with Birmingham City Football Club. So I had a bit left on my contract. So I end up doing that. And then my agent goes in and talks to the owners at Northampton on Easter. This had been on the Easter Thursday, something like that, before the Friday. And we have Tranmere away at Prenton Park on the Friday, or it might be the Monday. So we agree a 2-year deal. So, right, we'll sort it out next week, come back, and I'll get it all signed up, 2-year deal. And I snapped my cruciate at Tranmere on the Easter Monday. Either Friday or Monday, I don't know. So I run back, and I never had any big injuries in my life. So get clamp my knee. So I think, oh, this feels a bit funny. And then the ball gets put in the channel behind me. As I turn, my knee just goes pop. I heard this massive pop and this most excruciating pain I've ever felt in my life. I thought, what the hell happened there? Down, and my arm goes in the air. My Ronnie Macca was saying about breaking a leg against Tranmere, wouldn't he? So something with Tranmere. So on the way back, I'm thinking to physio, old Dennis, old physio there. He's like, oh, I think you've ruptured your hamstring. I said, I've got pain in the back, mate. So I think I phoned Neil McDarmid, Blues physio, because no disrespect to high quality physio Neil was. And he said, mate, get yourself over here. I'll speak to Steve. Steve phoned me straight away, Steve Bruce. And I'd gone permanent, by the way. So Steve Bruce has phoned me. He said, get yourself back here. He said, you're having a scan with us. So I have a scan, ruptured my cruciate, everything's gone. He said, right. He said, this is Steve. He said, you'll get our surgeon. He said, you'll do your physio here, rehabilitation here. I'm not a Birmingham City player, by the way. So that says a lot. And I think when we go back to how I was as a professional, I think if I hadn't been like that, people wouldn't look back on me and go, do you know what? We need to look after him now, because and that's the best thing that happened to me. So I'm 32 and people go, well, you're finished. You've done your cruciate at 32. Back then, it wasn't like it is now. Mm. The rehab was long, and Neil beasted me. I had Keith Porter at the Nuffield in Birmingham, who'd done all the lads. They talk about the surgery. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Reconstruction at 32. A year out of the game. And I went and seen Northampton and my agent. They said, what contract? I said, pardon? They said, no, we're not giving you a contract. So that tells you how football is. Wow. So suddenly I've gone from Premier League player on loan, being offered a 2-year deal because I'm doing really well, not signed it, snapped my crew shirt, no contract. So I've got no contract, no income, nothing. So not a lot of people know this about this. So PFA, shout out to PFA. Benevolent Fund, fantastic. So they pay me all through my rehab. Colin Coldwood takes over at Northampton, says, I'll have a look at you, Jerry. I know what's happened. I play at Villa, the training ground, Baltimore. I'm dragging my knee. So I'm like 8 months, 9 months in. I know I'm not right, but I have play. And I think, yeah, I can do it. I'm limping and I'm dragging my knee. My gait's not right. And I'm thinking, what am I doing? I walked off the pitch. So I'm not right, Colin. He said, yeah, I can see you're not right. So come here and watch Grange. Grange was playing. He got injured. He playing a reserve game here, so I come and watch him. And I sit in the stand here, and John Ward sit next to me, Wolves manager. And he said, Jerry, what are you doing? And I was a year then out of the game. I said, well, he said, I thought, where are you not playing here? Where are you? And I said, oh, I've been to Northampton, told him the story. He said, come to Cheltenham. He said, and train with us. He said, I can't offer you any money. Come down and get yourself fit if you want. I said, oh, thanks, John. So 225 games later, I play for Cheltenham Town. So four contracts, play my last game at 39 in League One. So that tells you my character. I rolled my sleeves up. I said, no one's going to finish me now.
Do you think being so fit throughout your career helped that as well?
100%. And my mentality to it. Steve Bruce, massive partner. That's why I mentioned him earlier. I saw him in Portugal not long ago, and I had to thank him again. And it was funny because I knocked a glass of wine, a bottle of wine, as I was chatting to him about it. It went everywhere. But I said, thank you. And I always tell people, whatever I do, I'd speak about Steve and I say this, without him saying, come back and do my rehab, I wouldn't have got back. There's no way I'd have got back. And Neil McDiarmid beasted me. We were doing Rambo runs and all sorts of stuff. And I was training four times a day at Birmingham City Training Ground. And the likes of Robbie Savage, Emil Heskey are coming in on the physio bed. And Bruce is saying, no, get on there, mate. Get yourself fit. We understand. You've got to get fit. Come on.
Wow.
It's amazing. So it's a fantastic, powerful story. And for him to do that, I've got a lot of thanks to say to him for doing that. And I know it's you in the end got to do it. So I go down there and, like I said, we get promoted from League Two to League One at the Millennium. So I'm playing in front of 30,000. Story goes round again. So I end up back at the Millennium at 36 years of age, playing in front of 30,000 for Cheltenham Town and getting promoted to League One. Get drug tested afterwards because they think he can't be running around 36. I miss all the celebrations in the dressing rooms. It's like tumbleweed. When I get back, all the lads are gone. Champagne bottles everywhere. But we have a good night afterwards.
Yeah. They're all gone.
But I'm fortunate in that regard that
Bring him in. There's no way.
Yeah, exactly. He can't be running around like that at 36. So, listen, I guess it tells what a football career is like, football story. There's loads of ups, but there's so many downs that people don't see and so many low moments. Don't get me wrong, I had so many low moments. Imagine being out of contract.
Well, you signed, shout out to the PFI, because we've had loads of really negative stories from other players about the lack of support they've had. So it's nice to hear that they've been able to help someone.
Fantastic. No, really good. And you know, it's not difficult to live with someone like that when all they've done is sport in their career. So it affects your family life, obviously, when you go back and things like that. So, and I'm really proud of the fact that I ended up playing. And, you know, I go to Leeds with Cheltenham Town. We did a double over Leeds in League One. We're playing Notts Forest at Cheltenham, Little Cheltenham. We call ourselves Little Cheltenham. But to survive in League One, we played the last game of the season against Doncaster to survive in League One. And I captained the side. So some really good memories. I had four promotions in my career. So I'm really grateful, you know, when I'm at Western Supermare, I get one to the Southern League, Yeovil Town to the conference, and then Birmingham City to the Premier League because I played games in that season, then Cheltenham to League One. So I've got a lot to be really, really proud of and really grateful of my career. And it's easy to think about the Women's Cup stories and the injuries. And then I leave Cheltenham in the end because Martin Allen comes in, Mad Dog, and I've played with Keith Downing and John Ward, and they're such great guys. And I was almost like an extension. I started thinking about me coaching then. I was an extension of the staff. They'd always use me as that. And I have clauses in my contract. You play 25 games, you get another year. And I love that because it's like, I'm going to have to play. And it made me play. And then I went, Martin Allen coming in. It was obvious then. It wasn't, you know, I'm 36. I went on loan to Forest Green. And I went as player coach, first team player coach. So I started coaching there. And I only have two big injuries, and they're good ones when you have them. So I snapped my cruciate, and then at 39, I smashed my face against a steel bar behind the goal at Forest Green Rovers, and I have a titanium plate put in my face.
Was that right? Was there your ex-colleague from Northampton as well?
Yeah, Chris Crothers, yeah, that's it.
Give you a nudge into it.
Yeah, so Chrissy Crothers, I go on the outside. In my eyes, in my vision, I went really quick, but I probably didn't at 39, rather. But I went past him and he didn't like it, I don't think. It was innocuous. Listen, it's one of them things. I just had a little nudge me off the ball. And as I've gone off, if you go to Forest Green, there's like the pitch and then it goes down. As it goes down, I can see the steel bar and I'm heading for it, but I can't do anything about it. And I whack my face straight against it. As Jerry Gill does, I got up. Physio, come on, push me face a bit. He said, you're all right. Ian Rogerson, by the way, that was.
Right.
Yeah, Dodge. He was manager. He was a physio at Forest Green. Okay. I'd run round the pitch. So it's about 5 minutes left in the first half. I run and my dad says, went to run straight. And he said, you just ran on like a banana bent. He said, you ran and you went all over the place. And all I can remember was thinking, I hope the ball don't come anywhere near me. I'm just seeing blurred. Obviously I'm concussed. And I've shattered my eye socket and cheekbone in three places, by the way. So I play on, come off at halftime and I'm sick everywhere. And long and short of it is then
Yeah.
It wasn't so much that, actually. They said, have a shower. They left me in there. Have a shower. You'll be all right. That's what it was in those days. You'll be all right. Anything could have happened to me.
Get a sponge.
Yeah.
Get a magic sponge.
Yeah. Spray him. Exactly. And then I go back. And then obviously I'm on loan from Cheltenham. So Forest Green said, oh, we'll go to hospital. I go to Warwick on the way back. So I'm going back to Hockley Heath. So I go into Warwick Hospital. They said, we'll send you Coventry. We'll operate. We'll split your face and we're going. I said, no, you're not touching my face. I pride myself in my face. So they said, we'll go behind the ear. I said, no, I've got to phone Cheltenham. So I phoned Cheltenham, thankfully, and they said, we'll get you into Worcester Royal with a guy called Phil Earle. And shout out to Phil. Two surgeons I've had have been lucky. He went up through the roof of my mouth. So they did all the rugby players. So he's gone up through the roof of my mouth and inserted a titanium plate. And that was when I thought, do you know what? This is probably, I'm nearly 40 now. That might be a sign. Yeah, it might be a sign. I went and played for Redditch for a bit, actually, at 40, I've got to say. But, yeah, so, listen, these challenges come in football. And like I said, I think it's all experience. It's all part and parcel of it. And I think my grit, my determination, my professionalism was one of my strengths, my mental strength, to come back from all the adversities in the game and then still end up having a long career, playing lots of games and achieving lots of stuff as well.
Yeah. So obviously then after playing and doing your coaching at Forest Green.
Yeah.
So is that where at that point then you was, okay, I'm going to coach. Was that a conscious decision then?
Yeah, I was doing some stuff. I went in with Kevin Broadhurst, who signed me, by the way. Shout out to Kev. Kev signed me at Northampton Town. So great guy. Brilliant.
Glad to get him on.
Yeah. Kev's amazing. Mm. So Kev took me to Northampton at the time and really valued what I was as a player. I think he saw a bit of him in me, maybe, the way I was from me, 100%. I know Kev was very much like that, probably a better player than me. But I went there and I was coaching in the college system at Blues at West Hills. So Skip was in it, Dealey was in it for a bit with Dean Holtham. And so I started coaching there and doing a bit on the Wednesdays and then started doing a bit at Cheltenham. And then Forest Green obviously came along and I really got my juices flowing in that. I ended up going to Solihull Moors with Bob Faulkner, God rest his soul, really old school manager. A manager at Solihull back in the day, and I started doing bits there. But the big one was I went to Bristol Rovers with Paul Trollope and started doing the under-18s there. So I was done academy coaching and it's gone through then. So I went, Kidderminster Harriers set up an academy over there and become academy director. It's running now. I'm really proud of that. Over sort of 125 kids on that program over there now. And then I was, because it was a Wednesday program, those games, and I was speaking to Paul Trollope had gone down with Chris Hewton, a man I respect very much in the game as well, down to Norwich. And he said, do you want to go out on Saturdays and watch some players for us, do some scout? I said, yeah, brilliant. That'd be great for me. Young coach, out I go. So I was watching players. Chris liked the way I'd done my report. He said, can you go and watch the next opposition? So I'm now going, watching like Blues or Huddersfield and doing match reports. He said, will you go to Europe? So suddenly I'm now European scout for Norwich City. So I'm at Birmingham Airport on Sundays. I've got my programme at Kidderminster. I'm at Birmingham Airport every Sunday going to San Siro, or I go out to Spain or go to Holland. I'm back in the same day watching a game and watching players. I remember going to watch Wilfred Boney for Norwich City and I'm sat and there's Chelsea and I'm phoning Chris, Chelsea are in for him, mate. We've got no chance. But that as a young coach was invaluable because I'm watching different systems, different countries, different players, different styles. And then he offered me a full-time role at Norwich, and I went down and became under-18s manager with a good friend of mine, Neil Adams, down there, who's now part of the sporting directorship down there, and took over the 23s as well down at Norwich and worked with some wonderful players, the likes of the Murphy twins, Carlton Morris, Terry Toffolo, were all part of that group. Todd Campwell was a 16 playing in the 18s at the time. So I did that, and we did that lock, stock and barrel as a family for about 2.5-3 years. And then I went to Wolves with Kenny Jackett, which was wonderful, with the likes of Morgan Gibbs-White coming through the scholarship program, and I had a wonderful time. But and then went to India for a bit. I sort of left. In football, you get sacked, so you leave all these clubs because there's new ownership going in, new managers want different coaches helping them. The Portuguese and the Chinese had then suddenly taken over at Wolves, and Kenny had went, and so I went out to India and done a little bit out there, just some coaching in the American embassy and things, which was life experience really. And I got offered the Bath City role and took that on and loved it. Absolutely loved it. Love managing. It's my thing. I didn't think I'd ever want to deal with boards or budgets. I thought I just want to be on the grass, but I absolutely love it. Love managing players. Love coaching them. 7 years as Bath City manager and 3 playoffs. Sold 9 players in that time. Brought in over 150,000 to a Bath. A club like Bath's a lot of money. Gates have gone up from 5,600 to 1,400. And it was my former club, so it was nice. Story had come full circle right back round again. So did 7 years there and loved every minute of it. Absolutely loved it. And had some really good loanees there. You probably mentioned
it. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, obviously relevant at the moment. Tell us about the boy Semenyo.
Mr. Semenyo, yeah. So Tommy Conway as well, who's doing really well at it.
Yeah.
Was it Bristol City? He's at Middlesbrough now and sold Robbie Cundy the other way to Bristol City. And there's a lad at Cheltenham now called Jordan Thomas, who's going to get a move. Definitely he'll move up. I sold him from Bath to Cheltenham. Took him from Step 4 football. But Semenyo came in, Antoine, yeah, I said he's made me famous again. I've done that many interviews about him and went on Talk Sport the other day with Henry Winter as well, which is great. It's good for me to go on and talk football. But I always say about players, they're the ones that do it. That's why I talked about myself so much. You can get some more support help, but you've got to want it and do it. He came to us at 18 years of age on loan from Bristol City, having gone through a college program. So I totally respect how his journey's ended up. Really raw, never played men's football in his life. And I just remember him battering centre-backs, like 30-year-old centre-backs at National League South. And you don't see that from academy boys. You'll see it all the time. They'll go out, they're really good technically, but they struggle with the physical aspects of the game. But he was, and he scored 6 goals in 16 games, was a battering ram. You know, he was feared in the league, literally was feared in the league. And then went back and got his loan to Newport. You know, he's gone. So he's gone non-league, League Two, then went to Sunderland, League One, then back to Bristol City Championship and got his move. And credit to him, real humble young man.
Hard yards, then, isn't
he? He's done the hard yards. Mm-hmm. But it amazes me. People say, oh, you must have known he's a good Premier League player. I said, not a chance. No way. Yeah, no way. He had physical attributes, but to see him as strong as his left foot is his right now, it amazes me, honestly. And that tells you the work that boy's done.
That's last two, so he's just gone up and up in these levels.
Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. So it's nice you play a part in that, but, you know.
I haven't heard him shout you out in any of the interviews.
No.
Biscuits of Algeria.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sort
of, you think, before we do finish, you said it'd be nice to come down, come out on the pitch.
Yeah,
say hello to Blues fans again, because you got a little bit of unfinished business, as often is the case.
Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to say to Blues fans here and now, regarding your time?
Yeah, I'd love that. I love that. I know the club do it, so, you know, I'm not saying I'm the only player that wants to do it, and I know there's other players that need to do it or whatever, but as a player, you never get an opportunity really to say goodbye to fans. You're here 1 minute and then you're gone the next. In my instance was I'd gone on loan and I'd never got... One thing I did want was to come back here and play. And I never got that opportunity. I wanted to come back here and manage in an FA Cup tie. I dream of that. I dream of it. And you never know, that may happen one day. But yeah, I'd love to come back and I'll speak to the powers that be about that. I'd love to do that.
Jerry.
Exactly. Maybe a bit egotistic, that is, or maybe a bit that...
I love it.
But
it's brilliant.
I'd love my boys to be here for me, to see me, because they didn't see me at Birmingham City. So I'd love to see them... And they're local still, obviously, and things like that. So I'd love them to come out and see me and to get that Jerry shout at me, to go around and just wave to some fans. There'll be loads who don't know me, but there'll be a lot who probably do remember me, hopefully. So that'd be really nice. And the one thing I'd say to them is that they were the most incredible fans I've ever played in front. I've played in a lot of the fans now in my career. It doesn't matter whether there's 10,000, 200, 500. There's a way you have a connection with fans and the way you treat people. From day one, they treat me the right way because I think I gave 100% every time I put that blue shirt on. I want to thank them for making me feel so welcome when I come to the area, because wherever I went in Solihull, I never got any grief, never got any stick. It was always positive stuff. And I'm really supportive, even over the Worthing Cup stuff. They were so supportive around that and so supportive of me. And even now, you know, I get support all over social media on it. I've done some co-commentary work with the club. And I love doing that as well. So I just want to say a massive thank you. The best fans in the world, you really are. It's great seeing this place how it is now. It was sad when I'd left for a moment when it started to go and there was only 15,000 in here and 12s and things. But even walking around doing a little tour, and I'll go and take it in a bit more in a minute, to see this place rocking again and buzzing and bouncing, that's my memories of St Andrews. And I really hope that, you know, the new chairman's done a fantastic job. You've only got to walk around the place and the investment in the club, but doing it in the right way. So I wish them all the very best. I hope it's a successful season. It is to date. Don't run before you can walk, because it takes time. And I hope to see them soon.
Brilliant. As a fan in the 90s, I just want to speak on our both behalf that we've got a lot of love for you as
cheers,
a
appreciate
player,
it.
And you played it in the right spirit. And it's just the fans' point of view. Yeah,
kind of a similar thing to conversation we had with John, that you are known and love down here.
No,
for the effort, that. For the effort you put in, and that's the Blues way. That was the Blues way in the 90s, that put 100% in and you'll just be loved.
Yeah, I certainly was. I felt that. Yeah. Cheers, lads.
Thanks,
mate. Appreciate it. Thanks very much. Cheers, boys.